You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Hey everybody, welcome to MLB.com Extras. I'm Matthew Leach talking New York Mets with MLB.com's Mets beat reporter Anthony DiComo. It's kind of a strange year for the Mets. I don't think anybody would call it a particularly good year given some of the expectations, but is it fair to say it at least wasn't a particularly bad year given some of the developments that did happen?
Well, I mean, record-wise, they're going to finish with their best record since Sandy Alderson and Terry Collins took over, which I guess if you're looking as black and white as you can look, that's always a good thing. This is a team that towards the end of last season, they really aspired to be a playoff team in 2014, and obviously that didn't happen. I think everyone was hit with a little dose of realism when Matt Harvey got hurt and they realized they weren't going to have him this year. I think expectations kind of dwindled at that point, and that sort of we hope to and really think we can fight for a playoff spot became more of a, you know, let's do the best we can and go into 2015 as strong as possible. So I don't think it was particularly disappointing. I think in a lot of ways they had some players emerge. They had some nice things happen. So they were encouraged by a lot of that. But they've reached a point now where what they did this year is no longer good enough, and they really want to be better, and they really want to be one of those teams that people's talking about at this time next year.
And I guess that's sort of what I'm getting at. It ends up, I think, being a pretty successful year for Travis d'Arnaud. Juan Lagares has a nice year. Obviously, DeGrom emerges. Wilmer Flores emerges. Duda has a really nice year. It seems like it's not that hard to look at a young core here and see something where, with the right moves around it, this actually could be a pretty good team pretty soon. I mean, do you think is that too rose-colored, or is that a reasonable way to look at it?
No, they've certainly put themselves in a position where if they do the right things this winter, and well, A, do the right things, and B, have those moves work out, which hasn't always been the case in the past, they certainly could compete for a playoff spot next year. The issue is, you know, the payroll is very low. It was around $85 million next year, and, you know, that's going to bump up just with arbitration guys getting bigger contracts and just paying the guys they already have on the roster. So to go out and fix the holes that they have, be it left field or if they want to address shortstop or anything like that, they're going to have to spend a little money, and they're going to have to really increase payroll by a relatively significant amount for the first time in years. Until they're willing to do that, I think everyone's sort of stepping back and saying, well, we'll believe it when we see it. But until they're willing to do that, that's sort of the way that you can make that quick fix and make this from a team that's teetering on the edge of contention to one that can really go into spring training saying we expect to compete. So that's going to be interesting to watch with the Mets going into the winter.
And that then is really the sort of elemental question. Are they willing and able to do that, to make that leap and get to it at least a higher payroll? I don't think anybody expects them to be in that top tier right now, but are they in a position where you do see the payroll being higher next year by a significant amount?
Well, they say they are. And Jeff Wilpon, you know, used the term payroll flexibility, quote-unquote, when addressing the situation recently. So on the one hand, you know, you sort of have to take them at their word. On the other hand, they've said these things before, and they didn't increase payroll, and really it's just gone down dramatically from where it was in 2011 to where it is now. So, you know, if you're a fan of the team, you just have to kind of sit back and hope they're willing to do it, because the only other way to fix these holes that they have on offense is to dip into the starting pitching depth and maybe make a trade or two. And once you start going down that path, all of a sudden your greatest strength is no better than anyone else's. So really, I mean, the way I see it going into the offseason, they have to spend a little money if they want to put themselves in that position to compete.
Where can they get better? Is corner outfield really the main focus for upgrading the offense?
Yeah, corner outfield is a huge one. Left field in particular. You've got Curtis Granderson in right field, and, you know, maybe he's done being an elite player. Maybe he bounces back next year, but you're sort of stuck with him either way. Left field is the one position where they can really get significantly better. They have no one in the current roster that really profiles as a high-ceiling player there. And not that there's anyone you're really lusting over in the free agent market, but there are some guys who can help. There are the younger guys. There's the Melky Cabrera crowd that's going to take a big contract, or they could go a little older and try and sign, say, a Michael Kadire to a one-year deal or a two-year deal. It's the one position where they got very little production out of this year that you can say, well, with one stroke, we can maybe get some big production, some big power production, and it would go a long way towards making this lineup more complete.
Is there any way they do something like bring in a first baseman and move Duda to the outfield, or is that not viable?
That is off the table. They like what Duda's done at first base. They think he can hit with enough power to really man that position, and they've seen him in the outfield before. They didn't like what they saw, and it's just not something they're willing to do again.
And of course, the other key thing that could make this offense a lot better would be for David Wright to be David Wright again. What do you think the prognosis is on him, both physically and performance-wise, for 2015?
Yeah, we've talked about this before. I mean, the hope, and what you have to hope for if you're the Mets, is that his shoulder was really bothering him way more than he thought, than the Mets thought, than anyone let on at the time. Because if this is more age than it was injury for Wright in 2014, they're in trouble. They're committed to this guy through 2020. He's a monster part of what they're doing. You know, David said recently that he was more hurt than he was letting on and that his shoulder was really messed up. They went in afterwards and took some tests on it, and the ligaments were all stretched out. It wasn't really a good situation for a guy who generates a lot of his value with power hitting. So, yeah, they have to hope he bounces back in a big way, and I don't think anyone expects the David Wright of 2006-2007, who was a perennial 30-homer, 300 threat, to come back. But if you get more what he was doing in 2012-2013, and he can give that to you again next year, it makes the entire lineup a lot better.
Is this a thing where he's a candidate for surgery or anything, or is it just shut it down over the winter and come back strong?
They're trying to avoid surgery at all costs, and just the thought of, you know, opening anyone up if you don't have to is something they'd like to avoid. Right now, he's in the middle of a rehab strengthening program that will determine if he's able to avoid surgery. He thinks he will be able to avoid it. The Mets think he will be able to avoid it. You know, he could have a setback somewhere along this that would force him into an operation, which wouldn't be good for anyone, because then you're talking about maybe not being ready for opening day. But until that happens, or unless that happens, he's just going to rehab, strengthen, and hope he's back to 100%, you know, really by the start of the winter, so that he can go into a full, normal, healthy offseason.
They've got a lot of very appealing pieces in the rotation. How do you think the rotation most likely shapes up breaking camp next spring?
Yeah, it's going to be a tough situation, assuming they don't trade anyone, which is a big assumption, because I think there's a very good chance that they go in and trade maybe a Bartolo Colon or maybe a John Neath. But assuming they don't trade anyone, you've got Matt Harvey, who's obviously a lock for the rotation. You've got Jacob deGrom, who's positioned himself obviously as a lock for the rotation. You've got Zach Wheeler, who's a lock. And then you've got these other guys who are sort of a tier down. You've got John Neath, and you've got Dylan G, and you've got Bartolo Colon. And that right there is too many guys for five spots. There's different things they can do. They could say, put Dylan G into the bullpen and you know, hope he takes to it and hope he's amenable to it. They could start Matt Harvey a little later, maybe not have him ready for opening day in the hopes that he would be still strong and good to go coming off Tommy John surgery at the end of September. Or, you know, they could trade one of these guys in the offseason. They know they need depth, which is an issue, but they also have Noah Syndergaard, they have Rafael Montero ready to go from the minors. So it's something that they're going to have to sit down this winter, and they're going to have to really strategize, you know, with the front office in terms of who the personnel is actually going to be heading into spring training, but also if they are going to wind up having six or seven guys coming in for five spots in spring training, who are the candidates to start in the minors? Who are the candidates to start in the bullpen? Who are the candidates, and I'm talking about Matt Harvey specifically here, that maybe you wait and you take it easy with him in April?
What does the ninth look like? Is Mejia likely the guy, and is Parnell going to be a factor in that next year?
Yeah, Parnell is probably not going to be ready by opening day, but he could very well be ready by mid-April, maybe by the start of May. You know, what I think they're going to do is have Mejia start out. He certainly hasn't done anything wrong in the role, but they're going to have him start out and see how he does as the closer again. And if he's struggling when Parnell comes back, I think they'll put Parnell right back in that fire. If Mejia has it in lockdown mode and he's establishing himself as one of the better closers in the league, I think they'll let him run with it. The wild card to me in all this is not Parnell, but it's Familia, who's just had a great season and really a better season than Mejia in all respects. They like him in the eighth inning, but maybe he's their best option in the ninth going forward, just considering how good of a power arm he is and how effective he's been, really, in what's been his rookie season.
We've gone 10 minutes here, and we haven't even talked about shortstop, which I think probably would have been inconceivable a few months ago. It looks from the outside like they have a pretty good idea of who their shortstop is, finally. I mean, do you think Wilmer Flores at least breaks camp as the 2015 Mets shortstop?
I would be surprised at this point if he doesn't. And the reason why I say that is, yes, there are free agents available out there, but I think, A, the Mets would rather allocate that limited resources that they're willing to spend. I think they'd rather allocate that to the corner outfield. And, B, I think they see Wilmer Flores as a guy whose ceiling at this point is really higher, or at least as high as a J.J. Hardy or as a Jed Lowry or as these guys who are in their 30s already. They like Wilmer Flores a lot. They've always liked his bat. And, you know, over the past 2 years, he's hit at every level. So as long as he can demonstrate that he's adequate defensively at shortstop, which I think everyone believes he's done so far this year, there's no reason not to give him a chance. You're saving a lot of money, and you can allocate that money to a place where you need it a lot more, and that's corner outfield.
All right. Well, Anthony DiComo, thanks for taking some time to chat here on MLB.com Extras, and thanks, everybody, for listening.
Catch all of the second half action on MLB.TV Premium, the number one live streaming sports service. Watch every out-of-market game stream live online or on the go in true HD. MLB.TV Premium includes a free At-Bat 14 subscription, allowing you to watch live baseball on over 400 mobile and connected devices. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Visit MLB.TV for details.